Hello and welcome to Plottress.
This is Meg.
This is Lane.
And today we're talking about 10 Ways to Be Adored When Landing a Lord by Sarah McLean.
This was published in 2010 and is the second book in the Love by Numbers series.
And we have recorded episodes on the first book in this series, 9 Rules to Break When Romancing a Rake. Sorry, the long titles get a little tough, right?
Yep.
And then we have done episodes on all of her other series. So we're catching up on 10 Ways to Be Adored, and then we're also going to be catching up on 11 Scandals in about a month. So after that, we will have read all of her adult romances.
I think it's helpful for our listeners to have some context on where we got started with Sarah McLean here.
Mm-hmm.
I loved 9 Rules to Break When Romancing a Rake, and still do. Like, I think that book, especially for, I think, her first adult romance,
mm-hmm.
was really fun and really promising. And the hero in this book is the twin of the hero from that book, and the heroine of the next book is their little sister.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when I read this for the first time, one, I was far less versed in the romance genre than I am now.
Mm-hmm.
And two, I think there was a lot of grace given based on the profession of the hero and how much I'd liked the first book. This one suffered for me on reread.
Yeah, this was actually my first Sarah McLean. So you recommended 9 Rules to Break to me. And I was mm-hmm. like, oh, that one was on hold. This one wasn't. And I was like, do you think I could start here? And you were like, I wouldn't, but you do you. And so I did me and I read it. And I was like, ooh, this isn't great. Mm-hmm. But I haven't read it since then. I have read her other books and enjoyed them. I went back to this one and I rated it very low. I gave it a very low rating when I read it the first time. And so as I was rereading it, I put it on and I was like, wait, I rated it that low? I was like, is it really that bad?
Can we spoil why?
I mean, go ahead.
Basically, we both really hate the next one. 11, whatever, whatever's
well, that's hyper-typing. True too. Like we both hate it. Like absolutely hate it. We're going to review it for you guys because
I hate's a strong word, but like I really, in my head, this one was fine. I didn't yeah. remember loving it the way I love 9 Rules to Break. And I didn't remember loathing it the way I loathe the next one. So it's like, oh, this one's fine.
That's,
and upon reread,
exactly
it's
right.
not that fine.
No, there are some issues, which we will be talking about. So I don't know, be prepared for one of those episodes where we're kind of going to crap on a book.
Well, I feel like, obviously, we reviewed everything Sarah McLean's ever done. We like her as an author. This book got us to keep reading her
mm-hmm.
one way or another. And I think we've really enjoyed the Bombshell series overall and even the Bare Knuckle Bastards before that. So I certainly don't want this to be a, like, we dislike Sarah McLean rant.
No.
But I think it's interesting to go back to the beginning, especially when we both still agree 9 Rules to Break was really strong.
Yes, yes. I do still really like 9 Rules to Break. And honestly, the reason we are revisiting these books is because we were like, well, we want to be completionists. Like we've read them. We want to do episodes on them.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely reads like a book that was written over 10 years ago.
So like all that in mind, I think it's worth talking about this because I also think you can see the evolution of Sarah McLean as an author, but also as you were kind of getting at the evolution of the genre.
I totally agree with you. Yeah.
So with all of that preface, Lord Nicholas is a paragon of manhood and his eyes, dear reader, so blue, pearls and palaces, June 1823.
Since being named one of London's lords to land by a popular ladies' magazine, Nicholas St. John has been relentlessly pursued by every matrimony-minded female in the town. So when an opportunity to escape fashionable society presents itself, he eagerly jumps, only to land in the path of the most determined, damnably delicious woman he's ever met.
The daughter of a titled wastrel, Lady Isabel Townsend has too many secrets and too little money. Though used to taking care of herself quite handily, her father's recent passing has left Isabel at sea and in need of outside help to protect her young brother's birthright. The sinfully handsome, eminently eligible Lord Nicholas could be the very salvation she seeks.
But the lady must be wary and not do anything reckless, like falling madly, passionately in love.
This is a shit jacket.
Yeah, it's not great.
This jacket is so bad that it's going to be one of those where before we really dive into it, we're going to have to give a summary of the book.
Okay.
So, but before we get into all of that, we'll do our usual random number and our tropes. So this episode, our random number between 1 and 50 is 5. So we both wrote 5-word summaries of this book. Meg, what was your 5-word summary?
My 5-word summary. Marriage is the answer. Seriously.
Yeah, that was more disappointing this time.
Right? I did not remember how much emphasis there was placed on that.
Yep.
How about you? What's your 5-word summary?
I want you to know that after this, I need you to put an eye roll emoji.
Okay, I'll do that.
Thank you. Saving damsels takes many forms.
Eye roll.
He's got complex.
He sure does. Oh my God. This is going to be a fun episode to talk about. I already feel kind of bad in advance.
No, it's fine.
Okay.
It's just, you realize how raw it was.
Yes, exactly. Tropes, you will recognize many of these tropes from other romances. Of course, you do with like all tropes, right?
That's the point of tropes, I think.
She runs a refuge for women.
And that's sort of one of the things the book jacket is avoiding saying, and I don't know why.
Honestly, don't know why. It is really weird because they don't talk about the whole conceit of the book, which is, oh my gosh, this book jacket.
The conceit of the book is that given that her father has not come around for over 10 years and her mother's been dead for the entirety of that time, she's been running the estate on her own. And what she's done with it is turned it into a home for women on the run.
And he is searching for a runaway sister of a duke who has taken refuge there. And so that is why he is there.
And the B plot is that her father has recently passed, as the book jacket says. And so the financial straits of the home and its legitimate front and its secret back dealings are now in serious financial jeopardy. So she's decided to sell these marbles. And he also happens to be one of the world's foremost expert on marbles.
Because why is he, Lane, one of your favorite tropes?
So he's basically sort of an archaeologist spy.
Yep.
And it's like adjacent because the spying came first.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really spying. He sort of struck out on the continent on his own and ended up taking up a life as like a finder of people.
Yes.
And sometimes his work intersected with the government, but sometimes it was private stuff. So it's a little bit less like king and country motivated.
Mm-hmm.
And then during one of the stints where he got severely injured and where he acquired his trope hot scar, he took up archaeology because he was recuperating in Greece.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not quite the like idealistic academic archaeologist spy, but it's got a lot of flavor of that type.
Yeah. This book also, at least for Nick, leans heavily on the not like other girls trope.
Yeah, that was one of the things I'd sort of forgotten about in hindsight. And I mm-hmm. wish I could still say that. I just, like, I despise this. Sarah McLean has not relied on this in a very long time.
No, I mean, I think this may be the only book. Maybe 12 Scandals too, or 11 Scandals.
Well, and I also think a couple ones of the gamblers maybe did a little.
Maybe, yeah. But anyway, she's special. She's not like anyone he's ever met. All other women are trash because, and he knows because they're all trying to marry him, and or they're either trying to marry him or they're betraying him to the Turkish authorities.
Right.
So he's got a lot of emotional trauma from his previous relationships.
Right. So I would like to say two things I really liked right off the bat. One, I love the prologue.
Okay.
So her father is still alive in the prologue. And you find out he's regularly been gambling away her hand in marriage, even though he has no authority to do so.
Yes.
Because she's already reached her majority. So it turns out it's a regular occurrence that these dudes show up and just announce at the front door that they're her betrothed and they're going to get her hand and all this money that her father lied about the existence of. And it shows her summer, like, dispatching one of the guys who has shown up and the type of guy he is, the type of guy her dad clearly is, the type of woman she's become, the women who are protecting her, and sort of how exhausting she has found the entire enterprise during the last 10 years. And the prologue ends with her finding out her father is dead. It is an excellent prologue.
You are correct. It is a great prologue. It's a great prologue that could have set up a really, really good book.
Everything you get, and it's the opposite of the book jacket. If the book jacket had just been the prologue, it would have been a better jacket that did more to set up the book.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. You are not wrong. At least
from her perspective. So I think it captured me this time. When I read the prologue, I was like, oh God, did I like this way more than I remembered? Two, he has a friend he met in Turkey who goes by the nickname Rock. And I really liked their dynamic.
We're going to have to talk about that because I did not.
You don't like Nick and Rock's dynamic?
Correct.
Okay, interesting.
Very much disliked it.
I am ready to have that conversation. What I think I liked it because I like seeing male friendship on the page, especially men who have relied on each other that heavily. And I always like it when the person who calls out the main character or the hero or the heroine isn't the opposite romantic pair.
Mm-hmm.
I like it when characters have the friend serving that purpose.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is all great. Here's my issue.
Sure.
Here's my issue. Let's talk about it. Let's do it. Is Rock his friend or is Rock his servant? Because Rock just does whatever Nick tells him to do. And he like kind of calls him on some stuff once in a while. But then he's like, go do this for me. And he goes to do it. Like in the beginning of the book, he's like, we have to go to America. And Rock is like, that's kind of far away. And he's like, I don't care. That's where we're going. And Rock's like, okay, I'll go with you. Just like whatever Nick does. So I was very confused about what they meant to each other. How they are related. The fact also is that Rock is Turkish. He's Muslim, right?
Right.
And that's not delved into at all.
This was very, whatever the book equivalent of blind casting is.
Yes.
Where, like, it acknowledged, basically, it could have been a white character. Then it was decided it was going to be a character of color. So a couple of lines were added about how much harder that made things.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't feel like it was more than lip service.
So to really make me like their dynamic, I needed more about what their actual relationship was.
And that's like, totally fair.
Yeah. So I actually, it's actually in my notes somewhere as being, I found it problematic.
No, that's a very valid point. I think there's a lot about the character's backstory and relationships that are sort of glossed over here.
Mm-hmm.
Not just Nick and Rock and what they are to each other.
No, totally.
And so I think I didn't hone in on the specific problematic nature of that relationship, but you're totally right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it really struck me in the first chapter actually, because the Duke comes and he's like, I need to find Georgiana. And Rock is like hanging out with
Nick, his brother.
they're like in a bar. And this is when, so basically Nick is like, oh my God, they featured me in this periodical and all these women want to marry me now. And ugh, I just need to get out of here. And this barmaid hits on Nick and he's like, no, like I'm not into it. And so she immediately hits on Brock and he's like, please, like you weren't interested in me while this guy was here.
Right.
I don't know. The entire first chapter, I was like, what's going on with Rock? And we don't get any explanation of what is going on. So,
yep,
there you go. I mean, to be honest, I feel like this is an area where Sarah McLean has really improved over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, I don't think that we would have a character like Rock. We could maybe have the character dynamics that Rock and Nick have, but I don't think we would have a character like Rock in her books today.
In terms of how underdeveloped and underexplored he was.
Right. Like we wouldn't have someone who's like, oh, this guy's Turkish. And then like, that's kind of all we get about why he's, you know, what is his relationship is with Nick.
Right. No, that's fair.
So, I do feel like in this book, you can see her evolving, right? If you know her books now and you see this book, you can see a line in between where this started and where she's ended up.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can see her bringing this feminist or progressive view to historical romance. For example, she's like that Isabella's running this women's shelter, basically, right?
Right.
But I think she's stumbling over a lot of historical romance conventions. So not necessarily tropes, but like these conventions that you find in especially like 90s and early 2000s romances. So one example is that each of the chapter headings in this book is very Lady Whistledown-esque.
Oh, for sure. I think we've read a couple. Whistledown implies it's a gossip column. And this sort of bridges the gap between a gossip column and an advice column. So I think we've definitely seen a bunch of advice column variants of this.
Yes.
And this one sort of strikes a middle ground.
Yeah. So we've got that. I think Sarah McLean hasn't quite gotten to what an, in quotation marks, independent, strong, independent female character is quite yet.
Who is authentically living in the 1800s.
Right. Because we've got Isabel, who is in some ways great. Like in that prologue, she's wonderful. Right. That prologue is amazing. She's stressed out and anxious because she's running this women's shelter on no funds, which again, this is something that you can clearly see a connection with in, you know, contemporary society, right? But then as soon as Nick shows up, like all of the women are like, oh, we're going to get them married. So they like try to throw them together and like try to get them to, you know, flirt and all this stuff. There's this time where Isabel is up on the roof, like re-roofing, replacing the shingles. And Nick goes up there and it starts to rain. He's like, you have to get out of here. And so they go to like get off the roof. And Isabel is all, no, I have to go back and get the roof paste because I made it and they don't have any money. She doesn't explain that at this point, but she's like, she can't just leave it there because she doesn't have the funds for more. So she goes back to get it. And this takes me back to like a Stephanie Lawrence book for sure, right? She's like, no, I got to go get it. She turns around and she like almost falls off the roof because her slipper comes off. And he grabs her and puts her back in the attic. And he's like, I'll go get it. So he goes out and gets it. And of course, he gets it fine because he's a man. Totally fine. He knows how to walk on a roof, apparently. And then he comes back in and they have this whole, again, like romance hero, romance heroine dialogue that's like, oh, you need a man to take care of you. No, I don't. Well, if you did have a man who cared about you, he wouldn't let you on the roof. Like, anyway, it was just like, it felt very much like something that she wasn't sure how to write. You know what I mean?
Yes. And I think this kind of gets at the same thing that the archaeologist spy and the ways that that was a trope I should love, but didn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
She is a strong, independent female character who has taken care of others her entire life. And he immediately recognizes that and wants to be an ally who helps her and makes her realize she doesn't have to do everything alone.
Mm-hmm.
I am usually garbage for that.
Mm-hmm.
Trash. I'm trash machine for that job. And like, to the point that I can handle a little bit of chauvinism and be a very bad feminist. Like a little bit of,
we're all allowed those moments, you know?
The moments where, like previously shown to be strong female independent characters go, oh, a man's here and he can just fix it for me and I am very happy about that. I can be trash for that. He takes it way too far.
Yep, exactly. That's exactly it. Yep.
She becomes incapable of handling anything on her own.
Yes. I think that's the difficulty, is as soon as he shows up, she suddenly becomes incompetent in a lot of things, which is weird because she doesn't seem to have been incompetent before, right?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway. We do literally get, it is funny. So we talk about how she's not like other women. We do actually get a moment where Rock is like, oh, Lord Nicholas isn't like other men.
Yeah.
And I did laugh. I did roll my eyes and also laugh at the same time. Because, you know, that, of course, means that he's right for Isabel.
Yep. I did like the marbles as a through line that brought them together.
Mm-hmm.
But here's my biggest problem with this book. As Meg mentioned, he is looking for his Duke friend's little sister who's run away and is taking refuge at Isabel's lady palace.
Sorry.
When he finds out the true purpose of it as like a battered women's shelter, rather than telling Isabel, hey, sorry for misrepresenting myself to you, a friend wanted me to make sure his sister is okay, she clearly is. And I'm sorry that I misrepresented my intentions, but I had no idea what I'd find when I went looking for her. I'm worried that this Duke is not going to stop at anything to come find his sister. But also, I'm really in love with you and I want to make sure we work on this as a team.
Mm-hmm.
He chooses to hide it from her.
Mm-hmm.
And then even once she learns the truth that he was sent for that purpose, but has been on her side since learning what her true like intentions are with the women's shelter, she chooses to distrust him over and over and over again. To the point that there's a sex scene where he like says, do you trust me? And she says, yes. And all of that is very hot. The next day he like is like, oh, that was the bomb I needed to hear. The next day he's like, does she even trust me at all? And it just, it didn't feel like organic progression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's where I really got frustrated when they like chose to hide things for as long as they did, but then felt like they were just deliberately being obtuse.
Yeah.
For way longer, just to draw out the plot, it felt like.
Yeah, yeah, it did feel like that. But there's also this moment. This is probably a me thing, right? But
oh, no, because it's a me thing, too.
Oh, good, because I was so annoyed when it happened. So annoyed. Oh, my God. She's at this ball, and this guy comes up to her and he's like, oh, hey, Lady Isabel. And she's like, it's not Lady Isabel. It's Lady Nicholas. And I'm like, first of all, they're both honorary titles. So you can go by Lady Isabel if you want to. Mm-hmm. Second of all, I fucking hate that shit. We're like, oh, it's not Miss Smith. It's Mrs. Jones now. Ugh. There you go.
If you can't tell, Meg kept her last name.
I want to be clear. If you change your last name, it's fine. You're not a bad feminist, right? It's like,
I'm not trying to make, that was meant to be a throwaway joke, not like a statement of anyone's moral worth.
Yes.
I feel very strongly that the answer of, you know, oh, well, I've gotten married, or oh, my husband, can be like sometimes grating, but sometimes kind of cute.
Yeah.
But the, excuse me, I no longer have my own name, I have his, as some sort of like grand statement of independence really bothers me.
Well, and it's also the fact that it's, at least to me here, it's literally, it's not just replacing her last name, it's replacing her first name.
Yeah.
Which I get is because of the fact that she made both of them have these courtesy titles.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And like, so that's the proper term of, you know, way to address someone. But it is also like just very, I'm like, ooh, it well, really. But that's been this whole book, way.
Right? Is her learning to like trust a man and let a man in. And so her like being able to say, I, in fact, am Lady Nicholas is the ultimate. I'm not defending it. Again, I eye rolled it real hard. Is the ultimate. Yes, I actually do have a partner in this life, but because of the way the titles were designed at the time period, it just makes it seem like she's subservient to him.
Exactly. That's right. That's exactly right. You know, and I think, again, I think if it had been, I still wouldn't have loved it, but I think that if it had been like a, she had originally been married to someone else and her name was like, I don't know, Lady... God, I can't come up with anything, you know.
Bob.
Lady Bob. Lady Robertson. And she got married to someone else and she was like, oh, I actually am like Mrs. Jones now, right? Mm-hmm. She had married someone without a title and she was like, oh, I no longer define myself by my former husband's title. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That might have made me feel at least a little bit differently about it.
But we've talked way too long about this very minor detail, but yeah,
no, but it agreed. Bugged. I think it bugged both of us though.
It did. All right. I think that kind of covered trigger warnings.
Okay. So we talked about this. It's a home for battered women and it does go into some of their backstories.
Right.
It's glossed over a little bit, but he was a prisoner, not even a prisoner of war, but like he went to a quote unquote Turkish prison and he was lucky to have escaped with only this giant scar on his face. So be aware that there's some Orientalism. Let's see. And there's just some like references to teenage pregnancy as well.
The declining level of severity.
Yeah, well, look, you know, I'm trying to give you all the content warnings I can think of.
Well, right, like, I mean, there's tons of them. The way her father treats her, the way her mother treated her, like,
yeah,
she was parentified. There's a ton, but I feel like we got at the gist of it.
Okay, so, sexiness. Okay, fine. I admit it. This book is sexy.
This is the thing. I think when I think back on this book, I thought about the prologue and the setup. And a lot of the sex scenes, which are all pretty fucking good.
All of the sex scenes are very sexy.
And the sex scenes have the right amount of, let me take care of you, no one does.
Yes. Okay, yes. We're going to be talking about a different book soon. Check out the schedule. But yes, like Lisa Kleypas does that thing where it's like, don't worry, I'll take care of you, right? In a sex scene. And it's very hot. What can I say?
This book worked for me on that front reel. And the thing is, they are both still likable characters underneath a little bit of her insecurity and a little bit of his I'm going to be a macho dude. Like, it wasn't enough to make me dislike them.
Right.
And so I was not distracted during the sex scenes by, like, thinking they were bad for each other or one of them was an irredeemable douche.
No, that's true. So
even where the book had flaws, the sex still worked.
It did. The sex. Look, I hate to admit it because I did not like the book. The sex scenes were very sexy.
This is not a book where you're like, I would totally read the prologue and skim it for the sex scenes. Like, Sarah McLean, like, you see the bones of what was gonna work here. Like you said, the feminism, the pretty intense sexiness, the willingness to show really important non-romantic relationships.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that's the, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you can, if you've read her later things, you can see what this is going to become.
It's just that after a really, really strong genre debut with Nine Rules, I think you're right. She wanted to pay a little bit more explicit homage to the genre here. And I think the tropes she was working with were more dated than her natural style.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
So if you ask me in 2 years, I'm probably going to say I thought this one was fine.
I thought it was fine. Then you'll go back and listen to the episode and be like, wait, what?
But really, honestly, it was the yo-yo feelings at the end of the book combined with all of the Not Like the Other Girls TM stuff that just I struggled through.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, prepare yourselves because we are going to tackle 11 Scandals in about a month. So and this is one where we both are like, hated that book.
Mostly because of him.
Oh, 100% it's because of him. It's all him.
He's a hero that we do not stand.
No, he's a Maximus Batten hero.
Yeah,
except
he very much is.
Yeah. So get ready.
Thank you guys so much for listening.